Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Valerie Parker. I'm a businesswoman, author, and speaker. I've published 4 books. The first, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt. Secondly, Unveiling Secrets from the Heart, Forgiving Your Past to Free Your Future. Third, Restored Vessels, Young Adults Overcoming Adversities. And my book I released a couple of months ago, Unveiling Unlimited Possibilities. And that can be downloaded from my website, www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. And any of the products I just mentioned, feel free to visit my website, fromthesoulofawoman.com. It is a delight to be here. Last week, we were off in the islands of Abaco, Bahamas. And I must tell you, there is no place like home. I have with me my co-host, Shirley Carter. Shirley, you there?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. I'm an entrepreneur and a motivational speaker as well. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it is a delight to have you. As I said, I just came back from Abaco, Bahamas, doing ministry work. And I tell you, when they tell you that you're going to go on a ferry ride, don't believe them. It's like a little putt-putt boat with an engine attached. And I got sick, first of all, on the boat, on the ship going over. We went over on Bahamas Celebration, and I got sick there. Then when they said we were going to transfer to a ferry, I said, okay, well, it's a ferry, so it's not going to be a long ride. And a ferry ride is a lot smoother going across the water. Well, that wasn't quite the case. We were jetting about, I'd say, about 70 miles a minute across wide ocean with nothing but water, and water was flying just everywhere. Our hair was flying. Everything was going all over the place, and I tell you, it was a nightmare. When I got off that ferry, my legs were wobbling, going to the pick us up. And I was over there for ministry for 5 days. And that first day, they said that we were having service that night. I said, y'all go without me. I'm not going. I had to pull myself together first. But I also have with me a guest, Captain Mark Stevenson on the line. Captain Mark, are you there?
I'm sorry. You should have asked the captain the many, many tricks that a captain has to prevent seasickness, because this is one ship's captain that gets seasick too. I can't
stand. You get seasick and you ride a boat?
I sure do, but I can tell you there are many different tricks. I'll have to tell you about it later. There are many different things that you can use to prevent seasickness. And if you're not prepared, you have a miserable time because you cannot escape the boat. But and you get sick and you want to throw up and everything. But it just reminds me of a phrase from my favorite book that tells me a fool returns to his folly as a dog returneth to his vomit. And you got to make sure that if you go back next time that you're prepared, or you're going to have some more of that folly.
Well, I did just that. I vomited. It was a mess.
I'm so sorry for laughing. It's a funny thing. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm glad that you recovered and that you were able to get there and spread some good news.
Yes, once we got there, the people there are so loving, so caring. I met some wonderful people there, and this young lady was so phenomenal with her voice. Her name is Simone. I said, I have got to get you in the States. Now, you know, Shirley, when I hear or know somebody that's great, I just go all overboard because, I love individuals that have a purpose in their life, that have goals and, just need someone to, like, help them get to that next level. And she is that individual. She is so sweet. I mean, when she sings, the anointing of God just fills the temple. So we're going to be hearing from her real soon. I told her she needs to start working on her demo tape so that I can send it out to pastors and leaderships I know, because one of the things is when you're doing ministry, you always need an anointed psalmist, always.
Yes.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk about becoming the change, to become the change. We often talk about, we wish this would change, we wish that will change, and things are always going haywire in our communities. And it's not till something tragic happens that we want to mount up and say, why didn't somebody do something? I know Lyndia Grant will be joining us soon. She's of the Baltimore area, and she's going to be part of the Fight for Your Dreams tour there. And, Mark, I will be in Chicago next month, and you'll be a part of that. And the reason...
Yay!
The reason I started this tour was because there had been so much disconnect in the family. There's been so much disconnect with the headship. And one of the things is we've lost our vision. We've lost our way. We failed to dream. We failed to plan. We failed to think. We failed to believe. And unless there's somebody or a voice stirring them up, like, you know, somebody crying out in the wilderness, you know, trying to stir up the gift, unless there's somebody there that's there to stir you up and promote you and remind you of who you are and whose you are and should be, you stand stagnated and don't do anything. There's so many different things are going on in the community, such as the Trayvon Martin case. This young man was killed, and, you know, of course, individuals are outraged now, but there were other sacrifices before Trayvon Martin. But how many are we going to allow to go forward? How many are we going to allow to be broken before we stand up and say no more? Mark, you have anything to say regarding that?
Absolutely. I'm taken aback at what has happened to this young man. But we also have to take into account of why are we sending our children out unprepared. And when I mean unprepared, I mean that we must put our children in the frame of mind that they must protect themselves. You see, I don't see any sense in sending a child out, even if he has the right to wear a hoodie and dark glasses or with his pants hanging down. I don't know that this young man was looking all like that, but I'm just saying that we must train our children to look a certain way. You must look like a prospect and not a suspect. You must put yourself in place to be receiving the opportunities and blessings that God has laid out for you to receive. You cannot expect for someone to respect you. I just couldn't imagine what would I do if I went in my backyard and I saw a young man cutting through my yard, for example, with a hoodie on. I'd be intimidated and want to protect my home. So we have to be careful the way that we teach our children. We have to teach them not to be carrying a cell phone in hand, because how many of us have gotten reports of children and a young man having a cell phone in his hand while talking to the police or being approached by the police, and they just say, well, I thought it was a gun. There are certain ways that we as adults are responsible for training our children and becoming part of the change, meaning that we need to start at home first, training our children to be able to receive the blessings and not the punishment that is waiting for them around every corner.
Well, Mark, you know, what you said was very good information, and thank you so much for sharing that. And this is going to be truly a Hot Topics from the Soul, because these are things that Hot Topics from the Soul was created to be a lifeline to the community, to allow us to be able to speak and voice our opinion of social issues. And this is and tragedies such as this in our community. But, you know, 2 years ago, my son's very good friend, who is his teammate football player, Dan Roy, DJ Henry, was gunned down by the police. He was in his car. They had a homecoming game, and he had his window up, and he was waiting to get some of his other friends in the car. The kids loaded into the car, and the police officer knocked on the window and motioned for him to move. So he proceeded to move his car, and he was moving away slowly. Well, this cop took it upon himself to jump on the hood of the car. And at that point, one of the other officers took a gun and started firing in a car with five children in the car, five young adults in the car. Now, he was trained up well. This young man had a scholarship. He had a promising future. He wasn't walking around with his pants falling down. He was well-respected by all his peers, well-liked in the college, well-liked in the community. His parents were very influential. As a matter of fact, if any of you want to Google Dan Roy, DJ Henry, go to the website, Google him, and look at his response to how his parents conducted themselves when this whole tragedy took place. They never went irate. They were affluent people, and they raised their child to be the same way. And the court system, the grand jury, voted that it was rightful, that the officer was right in shooting him because of the fact that he used the car as a weapon. Well, pray tell me, how is it that he used it as a weapon when you jumped on the car? And what gives you the right to fire point blank into the car of unarmed children? They were children.
Well, again, if I may, there is a process, and I just moved into and opened a business in Englewood of Chicago. Englewood was just announced as the most dangerous community in the United States. It's more likely, twice as likely, to be shot on the streets of Englewood than it is on the streets of Iraq, as if you were going down the street in a military uniform alone down an alley. And it's a very dangerous community, and I have trained my five children and my 12 grandchildren. I had them all assembled, and I showed them how you are supposed to act if you're in the car, whether you're driving or as a passenger, if the police flag you down. You must have your lights on. As the police flag you down, you must turn your car motor off. You must have your hands in the 10 and 2 o'clock position, and you should turn on the lights on the inside of the car if it is dark. When the police approach and ask you for your ID, you keep your hands on the steering wheel and tell the police officer, I'm going to take my right hand and I'm going to reach for my wallet. I have a wallet in my back right pocket. I'm going to get my wallet to show you my identification. And you move slowly and methodically. Otherwise, you're going to be somebody's accident. It may sound a little facetious, but I'm telling you, in Englewood, you do not behave any differently. And I would have to duplicate the same behavior across the nation, because if you're a certain color and you look a certain kind of way, you are a target as soon as they stop you. So you have to be real careful about that. I turn my car off. I have my hands where they can see them. I have the lights on the inside, and I talk very politely to them, because any confrontation whatsoever makes me a suspect, and I have to look like a prospect. I have to look like I'm like they're on my side. It says it on the side of every Chicago police car that we serve and protect, and I consider them serving and protecting me. You see, as Jack Canfield said, he's a inverse paranoid schizophrenic, meaning that instead of thinking everybody is out to hurt him, he thinks everyone is out to help them. So that's what I am, an inverse paranoid schizophrenic. And when the police pull me over, I consider them part of my team. They're just checking to make sure that I'm in compliance.
Well, you know, point well taken, Mark, and thank you so much for that instruction, because I'm sure that it will be valuable information to someone that is listening, and that they can relay that to their children. And getting back to Dan Roy Henry case, my son was a part of that incident, in being that when he saw his friend there bleeding and crying out for help, he rushed to his aid, and he saw him going into shock and wanted to give him, to resuscitate him. And he was pulled away by law enforcement, and he said, "I'm trying to help him. Let me do CPR. They refused to give that young man help. He was dragged out of the car after he was shot, and he was handcuffed with his hands behind his back, and they threw him to the ground face down, and blood is oozing out. And later they stated that my son and the other two other young men that were trying to help and telling the police that he was shot, they said that because they interfered, they did not know he was shot. Well, if you got blood in the seat and you drag someone out and you know you shot into that car, wouldn't you check to see if you shot them? If you see something wet on their jacket, wouldn't you think to see if it was blood? It was not water." But then they not only proceeded to throw my son down, and then they beat him with the glove, and he got injured, and his face was injured. Now, shortly, seconds later, this white female came from the crowd, just as my son and the other boys did, and she proceeded to do what my son tried to do, CPR. Nobody prohibited her. It was on videotape, clearly. Someone was running the camera and captured the whole thing. Nobody stopped this white woman for trying to give DJ CPR, but they stopped my son and beat him because he tried to do that, and then they said he was not certified to give CPR. But, you know, my son volunteers every summer at the YMCA, and he has to take certification classes to be licensed to do CPR, and he had his card in his pocket, and he attempted to show them that he has a card where he is licensed to do it and can do it to save his life, but they didn't want to hear that because he was a young black man that they assumed to be a threat.
Well, and the police could have done the CPR themselves, as they are so trained.
They didn't try. They didn't. They were busy brutalizing those young men that were well-groomed. They didn't have scraggly hair. You know, my son is well manicured. None of these young men have their pants sagging. Clean cut young men, and this is what happened. I have Lyndia Grant on the line. Lyndia, are you there? Lyndia? Okay, while you chime in, Lyndia, we'll hear from you, your comments regarding that. But Mark, as I said, you know, we have got to become the change to the point that we're going to refuse to allow society to dominate and hold us hostage because slavery is over.
I really love the way that you selected this topic about becoming the change, because as this day passed, I really had to think several times, what were the things that I'm doing as an individual to become the change? Because the change has to start with me. I have to be the example that it can be done. I must defy the odds. I know that with the store that I just opened, for example, in Englewood, this community has a 65% unemployment rate. And because you can't even apply for a job at McDonald's without doing it online, I'm giving free computer classes. I want to create a microcosm in becoming the change. I want to create a microcosm of people in my community to be able to shop online safely, bank online safely. I need them to be able to know how to write resumes, do job searches online. I need them to be able to start businesses online and find out how to communicate worldwide in this worldwide market, because we don't have a digital divide in this community. We have a digital canyon, and we are in trouble. We're in absolute trouble because we are not computer literate. So being the change to me, being the change to me means that if I can get 15 or 20 people at a time, and I have that many in my class, that I'm training on becoming computer literate, of course somewhere down the line I'm hoping that they buy computers from me, but by giving free computer classes, I'm creating traffic in the store, and I'm also opening the doors in the wonderful world of computers to many people who are just coming to me scared. They're afraid of computers because they haven't taken classes in school before. What really tickles me is the way that the senior citizens have come on board. Do you know, Val, I had a senior citizen that told me he wanted to start a business. I directed him to get a book, and it's called How to Start an Online Business. Valerie, do you know that this guy says he wants to sell bow ties? I said, bow ties? Well, I mean, but bow ties? What kind of living are you going to? He says, Mark, look, I've been driving a cab, driving the bus for 33 years. My pension is all taken away at the senior citizen home. They give me $40 a month for spending money, and they take the rest of my money away from me, saying that it's for housing, food, and medicine. Well, I can't live like that. That surprised me. I'd never thought that they would do that to a public servant or anybody that's worked that many years on the same job. But they took all of his money in order to pay for his expenses. He says, I just want to be able to raise money and sell bow ties. So I was inside kind of snickering and laughing. But I said, let me help this guy. You know, I'll give him some tools and see what he does. I taught him how to order stuff online, put it on his website so people can order bow ties from pictures. And do you know that 6 months later he comes back with a check for $400 telling me, thank you, Mark, thank you. I said, for what? He says, this is my profit from the bow ties I saw. I said, you gotta be kidding.
Wow.
You gotta be kidding. He says, I just ordered the bow ties and I have them drop shipped. I don't even touch the bow ties.
Wow.
I have them drop shipped directly from the customer, I mean from the manufacturer to the customer, and the customers pay me through PayPal and I just keep the profit. And this is my PayPal check. That's what I said. Wow. I said, wow. He's showing me money that he would never have gotten. That made me so happy and so enthusiastic that here's another lady that wants to start a gift card business, a greeting card, that is. Greeting card business. She's a little artist, and she has little nice poems, and she says, I want to start this kind of business. So what I'm saying is now they have in turn, they think that I've encouraged them. They've encouraged me to help more people start their own businesses because it's possible. It's possible.
Absolutely.
It's a must. You know, and I definitely want to be part of the change. The change starts with me. So, Val, when you gave me this assignment, I thought about finding all types of quotes and being able to say something profound. I'm saying, you know, trying to be profound is not who I am. You know, trying to keep it real is who I am. And becoming a change starts with me. Thank you, Val. You gave me a new tool.
Yes, and I'd like to salute you and thank you so much for imparting into the lives of individuals. You know, a lot of people don't want to take time or invest in seniors because they figure they're going to die. They're dying anyway. And I, you know, I'm very offended by that because I'm a senior now, and we have got.
No, you're not.
Yes, we. You know, I got my AARP card, and I was so happy. I told Shirley, I said, I got my AARP card. And she was like, okay. And she said, I've been had mine. And, I mean, she just took the air out of my sail. I was so happy because, see, the year before I applied, and they told me, well, you have to be 50. And when I turned 50, I said, now I could get my AARP card. It was like when I turned 18, I was like, oh, I can drink.
You gotta be kidding.
But you know, this is it. This is life. Lindy, are you there? Have you joined us, Lyndia.
Call her. She hasn't been here.
I think something must be going on with Lyndia's phone here. Because I don't see her. I see her lit, but I guess if her phone is on mute, she can't chime in. But we're going to proceed and move forward.
I am so enthusiastic about you being a senior citizen, 50 years old. Okay. Well, my wife told me.
Well, that was a couple of years ago, but I'm just saying.
My wife told me, she said, Mark, you must. I married a much younger woman, see. She said, you must learn how to save us some money. You are passing up all these great discounts and all of this, and you got to quit trying to look young by dyeing your hair and all of this stuff and be who you are. I stopped dyeing my hair. And she got me a AARP card, and trust me, I've used some of those benefits.
Can you hear me yet?
Yes, Lyndia.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I had to go out and come back. I'm sorry. Because
I
could hear you all, but you couldn't hear me.
I could
hear you all, but you couldn't hear me for some reason. I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm back.
But you heard what we've been talking about. And
yes,
we're coming to the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, the Sheraton, Washington North. We will be there April 13th at 7 p.m. And we will have seven speakers, and Les Brown will actually be at this Fight for Your Dreams tour there in Washington,
mm-hmm.
D.C. And when I called you and said, Lyndia, I'm going to do this tour here, and I told you why I wanted to create this tour, you was like, count me in. What's going on there in your area?
Yeah.
Well, we're excited about it. We're getting the word out all over the place. It's going to be in the Washington Informer, our flyer, our FOMO. I checked with them yesterday, and they said, oh, it'll be in this week's paper. So I'm excited. 75,000 copies of that paper goes out. So, and your phone will be ringing because it has your number, not mine. But we're really excited about it. We've been talking to a lot of people that plan to come. I'm sending it out more and more each day to people who say, I want to be there. And after I found out Les was coming, Val, he's our teacher. I'm on spring break. I've been shutting myself up in the house and studying. Get ready, y'all. Get ready. Y'all are going to hear seven wonderful messages. But I told my daughter, I said, let me tell you one thing. They're going to know Lydia was there. They're going to leave with something that they can remember for the rest of their lives. And that's what it's about. It's not about me sitting up there yelling and acting like I'm a cheerleader. It's about changing lives, and so that's my goal.
Absolutely.
But it's gonna be good.
I know when I contacted the hotel up there, and I actually contacted a couple of hotels, and there were the hotels that were saying, you were trying to find a way to accommodate me, but they could not.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I called
mm-hmm.
this particular hotel, they were like, oh, let me call you back. I got somebody that maybe they can shift some things around, and they called me right there. They said Baltimore needs it. Baltimore needs it. So
mm-hmm.
I'm glad that we're going to be there, and I've reached out to several organizations there, and they're saying they're going to bring their people. So I hear a lot of friction and a lot of noise. So if somebody's doing something, if you can kind of mellow out with the noise so we can be clear.
Mm-hmm.
But it is going to be a powerful event there, and it's about changing lives. But it has to begin with us, as Mark was saying. There's tragedies everywhere, and there's so many young people that have gone through situations in their lives and have traumatized them to the fact that they just have given up on life. They've given up and said, I'm done, because nobody respects us. Nobody cares about who we are. Nobody cares about our thoughts or what it is that we want to do. So they just act all reckless and decide to go on and do their own thing. And this is a problem here. This is a problem. It works both ways here. We have got to want more, to do more. We have got to begin to dream again ourselves. The dreams begin with us.
And can I interject on what I think about it? I believe because Trayvon was such a young man, and the movement is happening all across the country, and I saw even in Great Britain where there's some people were marching over there, too, on our behalf. I'm just
in
thinking
Great Britain?
That. Yes, I did see that on the news.
It wow.
Was, and they said they were just showing their support because they have similar kinds of situations going on over there. That was what they said on the evening news. So I'm just thinking that because back in the 60s when the civil rights movement was walking and marching and before, you know, we had a lot of the freedoms that we have today, many of us older people understand and our children have not had that experience because Dr. Martin Luther King was killed in the 60s when I was in high school. And I remember when the cities were burning down all over the place and everybody was going crazy. Well, many of the children that are alive now weren't born then. And so things were never quite the same in terms of African-American community having a really big leader like Dr. Martin Luther King. Sure, we have Jesse Jackson and Reverend Al Sharpton and different ones, his Martin Luther King's son, a lot of people. But for some reason, this Trayvon Martin has triggered a movement that reminds me more of what was going on in the 60s. It was almost like when Rosa Parks wouldn't get up out of her seat on that bus. Sometimes it only takes one. And what this is doing, in my opinion, is teaching the young people today that they ain't got it like they thought they had it. They thought it was all good because many of them are not paying too much attention to what's going on. But they're beginning to pay more attention now. They don't understand that it's been researched and proven that there are more African-Americans in jail. Michelle, there's an author that wrote about the new Jim Crow. And she wrote, she's a lawyer, and she wrote about there being more black people in prison today in America than it was in the 60s when there was slavery time. More. That really just boggles my mind to think about it. And I remember going to Lawton before it closed with Les Brown when he was still here in Washington on the radio show, and he went out there to the prison to speak. Well, of course, I couldn't sit in the audience because the audience was a prisoner, so I was up on the stage with Les, and I was looking at all these good-looking men, and it just touched my heart. But what Michelle has researched and found out that the overwhelming majority of black men and women that are in prison, whites would have been locked up, but they don't get locked up for the same reason. And many of them should not be in jail if the white ones didn't get in jail. She's not defending that you smoked some weed one time and got locked up. All she's saying is if that's the reason you got locked up and you had whites doing the same thing, you didn't lock them up. So it's just done in such disproportionate numbers. So our young people are at a big risk already. And to see somebody marching today is important because it's almost like they're in a fog. They don't know what's going on. They don't understand that they're being locked up for little or nothing. My son works at Friendship Heights, a rich section of Maryland, like Bethesda, right way up in the richest part at a Whole Foods market. He's a seafood manager. Been up there for years. He was one of the ones, like Valerie was talking about her son, that used to give me trouble. Valerie's son didn't give her trouble. He just got into some trouble with some friends. But my son did give me trouble. He was a special ed student that used to do a lot of things. And he had a praying mother. I kept praying and saying, Lord, please take my son out of the devil's hand because I didn't want him in jail. So he would get locked up, but he'd always get right back out. And so now he finally got out of all that, and he's a seafood manager, and he's been working for years, and all that's behind him. And he said, Ma, that was when he was in his teens. He said, I've never seen no police up here, Ma, in this part of town. He said, you know, it bothers me that they got cops all through the black neighborhood, but over here I never see a police car, never see a police. That's because of where he is. And so that shows you right there. Doesn't mean they're not doing anything, because all those people that got a lot of money and a lot of kids with a lot, they got kids with money. They're using drugs every day, but there's nobody trying to arrest them. And if they do get caught, they're letting them go. So I just think that this whole marching business is at least scratching the surface, so we can
right.
talk about it, and more young people can begin to understand what some of the problems of today are, and that they are too in trouble, and they need to march just like we used to.
Hold this for
That's
a moment.
That's my take on it.
Well, hold for a moment, because I want you to give further comment. I have Jared Thicklin. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well,
yes,
my question for you, as your father raising four sons and a daughter, how does this whole situation, so you heard what Lyndia just said, Lyndia Grant and Mark Stevenson spoke, and, you know, I'm so glad I had the diversity of opinions on this show tonight because of the simple fact that we need to hear on safe ground. We have need to vocalize on safe ground where everyone will get a chance to speak their opinion. This show is going to be replayed and replayed, and hopefully it'll get into the hands of a lot of young people and save their lives by some of the information that was related. So how are you affected by this as a father with four sons?
Well, first of all, the Trayvon Martin case, you know, hit very close to me because of raising four sons, and particularly, you know, having three teenage sons, you know, 17, 15, and 14. And it hit close to home because of the fact, you know, hey, I buy them clothes and things of that nature, and really had never taken much thought of the hoodie until after Trayvon Martin was killed. And I think about how carefree they are, how when they participate in different things and how they live life very carefree. And yet it's still, the sad part for me is having to tell them that they still have to live with a certain degree of caution simply because they are young black boys. That though they can be free, they have to be free with a sense of awareness around them, because others may not rejoice in their freedom, might not rejoice in the fact of their independence. And so this have really sparked a lot of dialogue with myself. My sons and I, my kids, we talk all the time. So for us, I begin to give them a history lesson, and I told them that this cause, because they wanted to march. They wanted to wear the hoodies even more so. They wanted to go and pick up some Skittles and iced tea, and I asked them for what reason. You know, we got to stand for justice for Trayvon Martin. And I began and opened up the door for me to go into more elaborate detail about the story of our Trayvon Martin of that day, which was Emmett Till.
Mm-hmm.
And when I began to share with them the parallel of Emmett Till, and although his happened because of the fact he happened to say something to a white woman, and Emmett Till was visiting from Chicago, visiting down in the South, and did not realize just him being himself would bring upon this type of repercussion. And so with
wow.
my sons, we've had
I never saw
very
that.
Much, yes, just being in the South. He was being himself. Chicago was different. The old South was the old South. You couldn't look at a white woman. You couldn't say nothing to a white woman. And he did say something to her. And because she had already been elevated as a white woman above a man, especially a black man, that is, you know, and when she went to tell her husband and stuff, the rest is history. A young teenage boy that was beaten to unrecognizable, I mean literally having eyes gouged out. And
mm-hmm.
guess what? Justice was not served. And when we look at history there, these men were found innocent, but these
mm-hmm.
men later admitted to doing what they did. But the justice system itself did not find them guilty. And so with my lessons to my son, it's about, am I my brother's keeper? You know, do I keep my eyes open? Do I recognize that I must be not only responsible for my actions, but I must be responsible for my behaviors? And it's a tough lesson, because while you're trying to tell them that we're free, it's almost like you got to say we're free, but.
Mm-mm. Always that but. Mm-hmm. Now, Shirley, you have three sons.
Yes, I have three sons, and I was thinking about what I tell my sons, because I just experienced something with my, well, it's a continuous thing with my children, seems like. My middle son, he's 25 now, he had a car accident. He had bought a used car. He had an accident in it. He was having brain seizures. And the system, they went through that car, the officers and stuff, and they found a roach in the back seat after they pulled the seat out. They charged him with possession of marijuana. That case has cost him over $5,000. And he was given, he just went to court yesterday to get off probation for it. He was on probation for a year and a half. And where he had to go to meetings, there was no alcohol in his system, there was no drugs in his system. He ended up in the hospital for 3 days. All the toxicology reports were negative. But yet, they charged him with reckless driving, possession of marijuana. They wanted to give him prison time. And
wow.
We had an attorney fought it, but he lost the case. And then the profile. And I've taught my son from years and years back that always remember, first of all, you're black and you're male. And my middle son told me, he said, Mom, I never thought I would live to be 25. And he turned 25 in October. When he told me that, I cried. He said, I never thought I would make it to 25. So many of my friends have gotten killed in useless killings, drive-bys, wrong place, wrong time, or by a police officer. And when this case came up with the Trayvon, a lot of people are talking about the hoodie and the stereotype of it and everything, but no one is really looking at the fact that it was raining. Without the hood on his head, it's just a sweatshirt.
Right.
So because of the rain that was coming down, he put the hood on his head for shelter, protection from the rain. And as a result of that, and being a young black male, he is not here today. You could be any nationality you want to, but if you're out in the rain, you're going to seek shelter. If you have
right.
a coat with a hood on it, or you have a newspaper, or you have a hat, the first reaction to rain is to cover the head. He reacted to something of nature. And as a result, his life is taken. That in itself is something that's devastating. It is shocking.
Mark, what do you have to say regarding that?
I'm about to burst here because was that Lydia Grant that was just speaking?
That was Shirley Carter that was just speaking. Prior to that, it was Lindia.
Shirley hit on some very vital points, as Lydia Grant did. But first, you know, it just reminded me of just last night. I bought a mechanical bird that was remote controlled, and my 21-year-old daughter, I was asking her to show me how it works. I said, look, honey, why don't we go out in a yard? In fact, there's not enough room in the yard. Why don't we go out in an intersection in front of our house and try this? It was nighttime. And, of course, she had her sweatshirt with the hoodie. And I just out of instinct, I told her, look, you can't wear the hoodie if you're with me. You shouldn't be wearing the hoodie at all. She says, but, Dad, look, it's cold out. I'm just wearing it because it's cold. I said, don't you have a hat? I said, I don't want to get shot. You want to get me shot out here? Don't you know where we are? You know, I said it in a joking but stern manner. And I went on to tell her about dressing like a prospect instead of a suspect. And I had to make sure that she knew that I was – teaching her, not just disciplining her. She's 21 years old. But looking like that with a hoodie, you can be mistaken for anybody. And so that made me think of that. However, Lydia Grant referred to Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. Absolutely marvelous reading. All of us should read it. You see, she has done much research and has told us how we have been disenfranchised as African Americans from all walks of society, all being able not to, being placed on lists not to get jobs and so forth, because of once you have a felony conviction, for example, you cannot vote in 36 states. There are only 14 states in the United States in which a person with a felony conviction is able to vote. So disenfranchising your vote is one of the ways that the Jim Crow laws have, they used to do with voting tests, by asking you questions like, how many bubbles are in a bar of soap? How blue is the sky? But now they can't do it like that. Now they do it a different way. And disenfranchising your vote is very effective. If they've been able to do it in 36 states across this nation, they've been very effective. Also, they make sure that you are not able to get public assistance, public housing. You're not able to apply for Section 8. You're not able to live in certain housing projects. That's exactly right. You're not allowed to do that because you have a felony conviction. I'm telling you because I know I am an ex-offender myself. I some 20 years ago, was caught with $10 worth of cocaine. A $10 bag has placed me on a list never to be able to do things like teach school again. I used to be a biology and chemistry teacher. And I had some challenges, admittedly so, with drugs during my earlier years. However, even after 20 years after straightening my life out and being away from all types of substances for the last 10 years, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Because of the fact that I have this on my record, I can never again qualify for the types of jobs that have insurance benefits and so forth to take care of my family and be able to have retirement benefits, 401Ks. I tell you like it is, I have to have my own 401K or I will be at the mercy of the government to give me this little medial Social Security check, which I can't live off of. Anyway, remember earlier I told you about one of the students I have who worked for 33 years driving a Chicago Transit Authority bus, who is not able to make ends meet with the money left over from his pension. I'm scared to death because I knew years ago that if I was not self-employed and I was not the example that it can be done, that I would defy the odds. I am a leader. I must set the pace. Because I know that I have to be that person. I have to be the cure and employ others that look like me. If I don't do that, I'm not doing my part for myself, my family, or my people. I'm in trouble. So this new Jim Crow that was written by Michelle Alexander, I highly recommend that. And I just want to thank you all for having this forum, because Lydia Grant, when she mentioned that, you know, it took me back to that book. There's so much information in that book. You will be surprised and see how we are in much worse condition than we've ever been in history.
Lydia? Okay. Did you get muted out again, Lydia? You're live. Okay, something's missing. You know, Mark, when you were talking and saying that you were telling your daughter about how to dress and that she shouldn't dress that way, but you know, what we're instilling in our children is fear. We can't walk around in fear.
Valerie, they have to be afraid because this is no joke here. A woman
no, it's not a joke. It's not a joke, but why is it okay for a white man or a white girl to walk around with a hoodie, but not us. And you mean to tell me if it's raining, we can't put a hood on our head or we'll be shot?
Well, it is legal, at least in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, for a woman to walk down the street in a bikini. And she can walk down with some high heel pumps on in a bikini and walk down a dark side street if she wishes. That is legal. No one should tell anyone else what they can and cannot wear. However, if you put yourself in harm's way, if you're wearing a hoodie and you're going down into certain areas, if you're wearing a bikini and you're going into certain areas, you're not exhibiting what is called common sense. So our parents have to teach their children the things that are common sense. Don't carry a cell phone in your hand looking like a pistol. Don't have your pants hanging down. Don't have the hoodie on. I do not allow the youth to come into my store with their pants hanging down and with their hats on or hoodies on. I walk straight up to them and ask them, how may I help you? And if they have a hat on, I will ask them to remove it, and I will do it in a very gentleman-like way, because I want to help them. But I don't need them coming to my store intimidating my four employees and making them afraid to come to work. We have to buzz people in, and we have to buzz people out of the door. Again, Englewood being the country's most dangerous community, of course we have to take excessive measures that are greater than what our counterparts in many of these cities do. But common sense tells us that if we have on a bikini, don't walk down a dark side street. If you get on a hoodie, don't go through the white folks' neighborhood or come into a business with your sunglasses on, your pants hanging down, and your hood up, and your face covered up. I want to see who you are, or you're not coming in.
Okay, well, Linda,
you look like a suspect.
Yeah, I am. I just wanted to say I'm so glad somebody else had heard it about this book, because I did a seminar about it. I had Willie Jolly there. I had the news media out. I'm ready to take to the streets, because when my pastor asked me what did I think about Trayvon Martin, I said, well, I think it's good because it's catapulting the topic, but my whole emphasis went right back to the fact that there are more African Americans under the correctional control today in prison or jail or probation or parole than were enslaved in 1850, a decade before the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. So it's like quietly moving the black men. Well, we don't have no spouses. Well, that's where they're at. They're in prison. But it doesn't mean that they're the worst people in the world. It's just part of the system. And so we have to do just like this gentleman is saying. We have to save our few children that we have. I have two sons, and the two boys that I have, one went to Morehouse and got his master's, and he's a banker. So he never had a problem with how he's looking. But the younger son used to let his pants hang, and I tell you, I would go crazy because I couldn't stand it. And I have a Jaguar, and when he would drive my car, he would, like, lay the seat back and turn his hat to the back. And, you know, now I said, now, come on now. You got to stop that. But then after the police stopped him so many times, he began to understand. It's almost like you got to be a broken record. It's so unfortunate. So Michelle's book will remind us of, it's almost like we're in a war right here in America, like they started back under Ronald Reagan, the war on drugs. A lot of things started to happen in America against blacks when that war on drugs happened. And although we are walking around each and every day, we have to remember that we're still living in a country where there's a war on drugs and against African Americans, probably people of color, Latinos. That's the next group that's getting locked up a lot. African Americans in particular. So we have to teach our children. We have to get through to them. And this Trayvon case will help them understand that what you're wearing could make a difference. Now, I hear more and more people saying, I'm going to buy a hoodie. My pastor said, I'm going to go get me a hoodie. And you telling your family, don't wear hoodies for safety's sake. But yet, you got a lot of people who are in the civil rights movement saying, let's all wear hoodies. Haven't you seen them on TV and in the news? They're probably making more and more money because everybody's going and buying hoodies.
Yeah, Roland Martin.
So I don't know which one.
Colors of it.
I don't know. I'm not going to say yes or no on it. All I'm saying is it's good that the issue is brought up front. But for those of us living out here in the war zone, and I mean mm-hmm. America, anywhere in America that black folks live, then we need to think about and do those things that can keep us and our families safe. That's my opinion on
it. Well, one thing
and
I would
still
like to
keep watching.
Okay, Jay, final thoughts, and then Shirley, your final comments, and we're going to wrap up the show.
And I mean, I missed a lot of it because my phone kept dropping. But one of the things I said from the offset, and I understand symbolism, I think we might not be on the right side of the symbolism with the hoodie right about now. We must remember the Unabomber, when he was profiled, he had a hoodie. That was one of the first description of the Unabomber. We didn't see everybody going around with hoodies because of the Unabomber, but I will say this. Once again, we make symbolisms in order to make certain statements. I agree with the caller earlier when he talked about the fact that there are certain things that just got to be common sense, and we have to use common sense measures when it comes to certain things. We talk about freedom, and I'm a son of the South, born and raised in Selma, Alabama, in the time of civil rights marches and stuff. And I see a different flavor because, you know what, we have to be careful that we don't glorify the very things that end up causing injury to us. And we go, whether it's the sagging pants, whether it's all these other things that have become fad, we got to look at what our freedom has also caused us. Because when we got the people that our young people look up to that is glorifying this look, that, you know, and where thugs look, and not saying that hoodie is thug, but when we see certain things that have been embraced by, you know, by pop culture and things of that nature, it's almost
right.
hard to deprogram young people not to want to do those type of things. Even when those things could very much cause them to be profiled, stereotyped, and put them in harm's way. So we as parents, I so agree, we have to set those boundaries and really make our kids aware. Common sense. You're not going to put yourself in a position where you're going to intimidate others to fight. Because if I'm a store owner and you came into my store, especially depending on what time of day or night, by myself, and I can't see your face, I might want to reach up under the counter, too, just to make sure I'm safe.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your comment. Shirley, wrap it up. Well, we're coming to another Hot Topics from the Soul, and this has been an exciting show. I would like to encourage you, those of you that are listening, to download it and forward it. Forward this show to young people, organizations, friends that have children, because we got some very good information from Captain Mark Stevenson's out of Chicago, Illinois, and Lyndia Grant from Baltimore, Maryland, Jar Thickland from West Palm Beach, and Shirley Carter from Lansing, Michigan. We've got some information from individuals from different parts of the world, and they're all saying the same thing. We've got to be careful, because although we look for change, we expect change, we want change, there's been no change. It's up to us. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to walk and march and walk around with hoodies and look like suspects? I agree with all of the callers. We should not emanate what is going on in society with these hoodies. It's just like these stars that start walking with their pants hanging down, and then everybody starts wearing their pants hanging down. These stars start tattooing. Everybody's tattooing. You can't even get a decent job for your tattoos all over the place. We have got to become the change. Join us next week for another Hot Topics from the Soul. This has been your host, Valerie Park, and co-host Shirley Carter. Have a fabulous week. Good night. Thank you.